Hello and welcome to The Preservationists, the monthly radio show for fans of local historic architecture, the history of unique buildings, and the people from our community working to preserve and restore them. I'm Astronomist Ray, the Vice President and a board member at the Lower Columbia Preservation Society, and I'm your host of The Preservationists. This month, we are chatting with Mike Brocious and Joe Lumpkin Brown about the process of undergoing a full restoration of Mike and his wife Laura's home. Today's discussion will be about exploring the architecture, history, and what it takes to undergo a full restoration of a home. So I'd like to begin by asking, what's the general history of that home and what brought you to this area, Mike?
Well, the history of the house is it was built in between 1890 and 1892, and it was built by Gustav Holmes, who was a cannery owner, came, I believe, from Alaska with a partner, Benjamin Young, who owns and built another house in Upper Town. You know, they obviously had some money and built a fabulous house on the hill with one of the best views in the city. So that's kind of the history of the house. And the Gustav Holmes family owned the house from when it was built until, we believe, 1960, when it was sold to a bar pilot in 1960. So the Collins family bought the house in 1960 or 62, depending on who you ask. And part of our research that we did, too, is we reached out and we actually found two of the daughters that lived in the house at yeah. that time. And they came through the house and walked through what they remembered. And we ended up putting a pantry back in the kitchen that was originally there that had been replaced by a bathroom that their father had done in the 1960s. So that's another part of that, you know, is reaching out to the families that have owned it to see what they have or history they might have. And we were fortunate that we were able to find people that had lived in it 65 years ago. And then it was sold to a couple that wanted to convert it to a bed and breakfast. And I believe it was only a bed and breakfast for like 2 years. And then it got sold to the Butentians, who owned it for another 25 years or so. It had very few owners, I guess was my point on that, is we are only really the fifth owner of a house that's, 130 years old.
Wow, that's amazing. That's quite such a small number. I never even thought about that. There hasn't been that many owners.
Which is part of why the history of the house, when we get into this, has not been that wrecked.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Because you haven't had a whole bunch of different owners that were trying to convert it at different periods of time.
Exactly. And now just kind of circling back to your own history, what brought you here to Astoria? How long have you lived here?
So I'm currently retired. I was an executive at Costco, and we bought the house in 2016. As a matter of fact, the very last day, December 31st of 2016. And we started restoration on the house in the summer of 17. And we've just always liked Astoria. We lived in Portland in 1985. We would come to the coast, and we always said, this is a place where we could see ourselves retiring. We love the architecture. We love the views. It's a working town still versus a town that's been completely redone. It's got a great working part of the community with the logging and fishing and everything else. So we just fell in love with the community, 35, 40 years ago, and basically we fulfilled our dream.
Very nice. That's great. And, beginning this restoration journey, you've had several people work on your home, but one of these people we have with us, Joe.
Right.
Now, can you tell me a little bit about what got you into your career in restoration and what you do?
Well, I was drafted into restoration. I was not in restoration. I spent 30 years in the motion picture industry doing things quickly, fast. You can have this set, good, fast, cheap. Choose any two, but you can't have all three. Let's get it done, and let's fool the camera. Well, now I had to restore things, and I met Mike and Laura. We had some casual conversations at the newer Flavel house when Gutenberg was raising money for his book that we're all anxious to read. And from there, I got a call in 2018, and I was introduced into the real world. I knew a little bit about restoration. I flirted with it, but this was real. And I was given the opportunity to do some wood grain samples. And I know how to wood grain. I've been doing it for 30 years. in the movie industry. Wasn't the same deal. Laura gave me a couple of doors to do. I did them, and she said, let's try it again. And we tried it again, and we tried it again. And then I caught up with her vision. I caught up with the standards. So for me, when did I get into restoration? With this house, basically, for real. So that was my introduction, and that was 2018, yes.
So you originally began in the film industry doing, like, sets and designs.
Oh, yes, sets.
Wow, okay. Yeah. And then going into this restoration, you were kind of, you knew a little bit of it, but you haven't fully immersed yourself into historic prior to this.
No, not really. Wow. I knew of Astoria, and I knew about its challenges with its historical footprint and its homes and the people here, because I came here in 1992 to do Ninja Turtles 3. And while I was working on that project, I discovered the town and its texture. And at that time, the Liberty Theater was still chopped up into three dumpy theaters, and the Hotel Elliott was a flop house, and it was pretty rough. But I saw the potential. I saw the grit of the people, and they just kept trying to make it better, and I wanted to be part of that. So I kept coming back, and then eventually I did buy a house here in the 90s, you know, and then from there I went on and bought other houses and, you know, all the steps.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, starting this project, what was the inspiration behind wanting to restore your home? Have you previously restored homes in your past?
Yeah, we have remodeled and restored homes since 1985. So I think this is maybe our eighth house. My wife, Laura, is just fantastic at figuring this out and doing it and having a vision and being able to just, you know, communicate that vision to the different people that we've had working on the house. This is by far the biggest project we've probably ever done, but certainly not the first.
Yeah. And when you first began this journey, you know, obviously you explained a little bit of the history that you know of, but did you have to go into a deep dive of the actual architectural styles of it? How did that work out?
Well, we did as much research as we could. So we went to the historical museum and pulled as many pictures as we could, which unfortunately there was only a few, which kind of gave us a sense of what was the house was like in the interior, especially in 1890. It was probably very original because we would guess 1890, 92 probably were those pictures. Same with the outside. So fortunately, the exterior of the house had never really been touched other than adding a garage at some point. So it kind of gave us a point in time of looking at, okay, this is what was here. How do you recreate it? But fortunately, again, the house was pretty much intact. It just, you know, it was 130 years old. It needed to be touched up.
Absolutely. For you, Joe, working on this project and going into it, did you have to take a deep dive in the history yourself, or what was it like on your end when you were?
Well, always, you can't do it without knowing the history or having to deal with it or having conversations with Mike and Laura. And then all the other craftsmen that were there, like Christy Mathers, Drew Olson, Ben Crockett, their work. They had to do all their work and tell me their woes and their challenges because I was going to work on top of their wonderful finishes. They had to get everything ready for the silliness of wood graining, which expects a very smooth prepped surface. And sometimes things weren't perfect and they were a little wonky and they were a little bumpy. And I was wood graining on things that were a bit mysterious, but that their prep and their teamwork and Laura and Mike's feedback on some historical references. The wood graining was already there. It was old. It was beat up. It was faded. It was checked. That was the style back in the day. People would build their houses with the local wood, which was fir or whatever, and they wanted some proper wood, which felt more like oak or something else. So the house was completely wood grained. But it was deteriorating. And all of it but one little panel in the front door of the house has been restored. Most of it had to be replaced. The pocket doors were sort of left alone. I did tone them and clean them. And, of course, the carpenters made them so they worked properly and didn't score the wood graining anymore, and on and on and on, all through the house. And so the last panel, when all of the wood graining was done, I toned it, repaired it, made it fit the rest of the theme of the house, and you can't even tell.
So it's really not, the panels aren't really wood grain there. What do you call that?
Well, trumpe-l'oeil.
Trumpe-l'oeil,
yes. Mm-hmm. Trumpe-l'oeil. So there was, yes, wood grain would be the proper term for the three-dimensional things, but then the panels created panels within them that were faux, trumpe-l'oeil, trick of the eye, which made them look like they had actual wood on them and trim, but they were just a flat surface. And in the day, they did trick of the eye, trumpe-l'oeil, plus the faux finishes to make all their wood look fancier than Astoria's forest could provide. So, right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and going through with that, you know, recreating that history, in what ways do you make it authentic to what is historical? Because obviously, you know, the year is 2024 as we record this. How do you accommodate these modern amenities of, like, what a home has? You know, is it difficult to do that?
I mean, I think the key is you have to find the right craftspeople, right, at the end of the day. So first of all, you know, in our case, Laura had the vision. Then you have to find, okay, who can fulfill that vision. And there's, to be honest, there's not a lot of people that could do what Laura wanted to have done.
Right.
We were fortunate that we found the people that Joe already mentioned, you know, with Drew and Ben and Christy and Joe and her daughter Faith.
Oh, yeah.
We found the crew that could fulfill Laura's vision, which, to be honest, I'm surprised we were able to find, because it's a small community. And what we wanted to do was, we didn't want to remodel. We didn't want to even restore. We wanted to preserve. And that's a little bit different. So to find people that were willing to do that, to be honest, there wasn't almost a day that there wasn't some challenge. But again, what made it work was, A, Laura had the vision and she communicated. But really, the craftspeople we had, they figured out how to do it. And you know, Ben and Drew, I mean, there's stuff that they ended up doing that they're probably shaking their head going, I have no idea how the heck I did any of that stuff. Because it wasn't anything that they'd ever done before. So they had to make it up. But they were creative and figured it out. Joe, the same way. I mean, Christy did all the plaster work and all the prepping for Joe.
Right.
And you know, we were blessed that she had so extensive of knowledge.
With materials that would work under all these different
Yeah, I mean, she was bringing stuff in with kitty hair and horse hair and all kinds of stuff. We're going, what in the heck are you doing?
Yeah.
But she had that experience from working with her mom for, you know, mm-hmm. 30 years. So
yes.
That really made a big difference. And I think that's what really made the project work. But yeah, every day there was almost something came up. Christy always said, this house needs a lot of love.
Yeah. Every day. Yes, yes.
Yeah, and Joe, on your end, doing the work that you did on that house, you know, I kind of wonder, so for you, do you feel like it was sort of like a learning as you went experience? Because, you know.
Oh, a lot of times it was. You had to keep your mind open. When I met Laura and Mike in 2018, I brought my daughter with me because I thought, well, If this happens, I'd really like her to join the team. She had never wood grained in her life or done trumpe-l'oeil or any of that stuff, but she's artistic and smart, and she's observant. And she joined the team, and Mike and Laura knew she wasn't that experienced, but she fit right in. And to say that there weren't challenges and you weren't learning, you were every day. You were every day. It was constant, and Christy was a wealth of information about current materials that were locally available, because my world was in L.A. with materials, and I retired in 2018, so I wasn't up to date on materials, and welcome to COVID, 2020 happened, and all of a sudden we couldn't get things, people weren't going to work. We had to pivot and turn on that, because some people didn't feel comfortable coming to work. So we would visqueen our room, we would wear masks, we would stay contained, and we'd still try to safely make progress during this just a weird time. Yeah. Oh my God, that COVID.
Well, and then we were living in Seattle while a lot of this was going on. So Laura was going back and forth, you know, trying to manage the project at the same time of communicating what was going on and, you know, pictures and everything else going back and forth, trying to figure it out. And it was, you know, it was complicated because of all of that stuff. But fortunately, again, we had a small crew and it became their passion as well as their job, which is really different.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, that's one thing that is super important. You know, you both shine with that passion of, like, the restoration project that you did. Why do you feel like restoration and preservation is important to you both? Why is it something that people should pay attention to?
Well, it's history, right? I mean, at the end of the day, it's history. I mean, you can always tear down a building and build something new. But what you lose then when you do that is in my opinion, astronomical. And we even, on the inside, we were preserving history. We weren't just remodeling. We were trying to preserve history. So 130 years from now, somebody could walk into that house. Hopefully, A, it would be there. And B, they could see 260 years now of history. And it's not, and it's keeping stuff intact. You had indicated earlier about, you know, how do you blend, you know, you need the modern conveniences. You know, back then, I don't believe they even had running water in that house, probably in 1892. So how do you blend a kitchen in that still looks period correct, but it has the functionality of today? And there's lots of ways to do that. We chose to do it in a way that is, if you walked into that kitchen today, I mean, we have a 1930 stove, and that's the stove. I mean, it's not there for placement. That's what we use every day. So we did it with the intention of creating something that was going to be historic, and it wasn't a museum. It's got to be livable.
Very nice. That's very well said. Joe, what about you? Why do you feel that restoration preservation is, you know, why should people pay attention
to it?
Well,
the biggest thing straight up front is the greenest thing you can do is reuse a building. You're saving history. You're saving the integrity of our footprint here. You're telling the story again every day when someone sees that and they ask questions and names come up and history comes up and then it continues to be told. It's living. I think restoration, and at least acknowledge it with preservation and sensitivity, is the way to live one's life and for a community to grow and to thrive. Otherwise, it's just anywhere, USA. That's why I enjoy being in Astoria and having the honor to work on a house such as Mike and Laura's or any other thing that I'm invited to help retell the story of what's there.
Thank you, Joe. I love that statement. We'll return back to Joe and Mike in just a moment, but first I'd like to invite you to this month's Topics in Preservation. Topics in Preservation is a monthly discussion and conversation held by the Lower Columbia Preservation Society, LCPS. Every month, this month's topic is light fixtures, period-appropriate lamps, incandescent versus LED, where to buy lamps, and how to restore, and more. This event is happening at LCPS's office at 389 12th Street in downtown Astoria, happening on Wednesday, June 19th at 6 p.m. For more information, be sure to check out our website at www.lcpsociety.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Instagram. Now returning back to our interview with Mike Brosis and Joe Lumpkin Brown. Now, I know you both had several memories that have been very memorable from restoring this home, but is there one in particular that stands out the most to you?
The kitchen floor.
Oh,
you know, when we found the linoleum underneath one of the cabinets that we tore out, we were going to say, we went to some places in Portland to say, hey, can you reproduce this linoleum? And they gave us some samples, and it did not pass Laura's test of being very, very well done. So her and Christy and Joe were talking, and Christy said, we'll just paint this thing on we'll paint the floor. And I'm like, what do you mean you're going to paint the floor? They go, no, we're going to reproduce the exact pattern in the exact color, and we're going to paint the floor. And I'm like, you are crazy.
And then Faith stepped in with her stencil idea because she used to own a vinyl machine. You know, with her artistic experience, she brought that to the table and collaborated. And there we go. We were all weeding vinyl.
Well, and you walk in it now and people are like, A, they don't have any idea that it's the painted floor, which is exactly what you wanted to create.
Yes.
And B, they are astounded that we would take the time, because it literally took 5 weeks for the two or three of them to paint that floor. It was a labor of love, but now in our mind, it's one of the centerpieces of the house. So there's stuff like that that was done, and it is a true art. It's not just remodeling. It's not just, you know, doing some work. There's true art going on in that house everywhere. Right. And I think that's part of what the Gustav Holmes family created in 1892.
That's wonderful. Any other memories about any other rooms in the house or anything?
Yeah, I mean, I forgot about the library, which is my favorite room in the house, which is, I don't know how I could forget about that. But, you know, there was so much damage. We had a professional wallpaper person from Portland come out and just to look at the paper to see if they had seen that paper before, if they thought we could recreate it, buy new. And he had never seen it before, but he said, hey, this is original to the period. And I said, well, what should we do? He said, you're going to have to probably just go over it. He said, I don't think you can restore it. And fortunately, Joe stepped in and said, I really wanted to.
I go, let me try.
And it's, you know, it was featured in the magazine, and because of just the amount of work and effort that Joe put into recreating that. And now you look at it and you don't know that a lot of it has been touched by hand instead of that all original paper.
Right. So, that was one of the fun rooms that actually told us what we had to do. So that's the other side of restoring something is you will find something and you go, okay, time to pivot, time to reevaluate. What do we do? It came out looking great.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing that, you know, paid off in the end is, you know, you have your fully restored home. So what was that process like seeing like the actual final product? What is it, a surreal feeling at all?
Yeah, there are times when I will sit and just sit on the stairway and look at the work that Joe did and the stained glass and stuff like that and go, this is a pretty darn cool place to live. Now, I will say, you know, I talked to Laura today and she's every day, she's, that house isn't still done in her mind. There's always going to be some little decorating to do. As a matter of fact, she had a project for Faith and we decided we've got a magazine coming in 2 days to do a magazine story and said, I don't want to even get into this one this time. But Faith has been over there doing painting on the outside.
Right.
There's just stuff that just, you know, you want to finish it off and do it right. And right. Unfortunately, by the time we do it right, maybe we'll have to start doing some touch-ups again. We'll have Joe be permanently employed.
There we go. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Nice. Is there anything else you'd like to say about the historic preservation and restoration process at all?
Well, I mean, again, if you drive by the house and you look at it, you have a history of the city, right? So, you know, if we would have done it a lot differently, that history would not be nearly as prominent as it is today. So I think that's part of what drove us to Astoria, is that you have that history. You haven't had it all, you know, torn down and destroyed, or people remodeling it and making old look new and all of that. So to me, it adds to the character of where we live and why we live here. That's a big part of why we did what we did. And it's a prominent house, obviously, but it does show the history of the city.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I live in an older home, too, but my house has no photos of it. We don't know how many people have lived there. There's always that. So sometimes you don't get the opportunity to get the juice out of your house and all the history and stories, but I'm not giving up on it. Every now and then I find out a little bit of something about my house, and it's important to hang on to those threads, and someday it'll all come together and a new story will pop up and we will know something else about those people, those times. And that's why I think it's so important to step up to the plate when something needs fixing or addressing. How can we preserve? How can we restore? How can we celebrate and save this? And that's my philosophy about any time I'm invited to a paint situation. Let's see what we can do.
Very nice. Mike, I did want to ask you, where does your passion for historic preservation and restoration stem from? Did you grow up like, you know,
studying history?
No, I never
grew up
with it.
I didn't even know what an old house was. Laura has always loved old houses. Wasn't any part. I grew up in a 1960s ranch house in Minnesota. So, I mean, that was my history of old. Whereas her vision is always the old. She's always loved owning older houses because of the history and the craftsmanship that went into those houses back then. This is the oldest house we've ever owned, but we've owned 1906 and 1920s and stuff like that. And to be honest, there isn't a day that doesn't go by that I don't see something on that house that I like, I didn't notice that before. Yeah. There's just so much stuff. And you go back and you think about, how did they do this 135 years ago?
Yes.
And you
yes.
really appreciate the vision and the craftsmanship that went into stuff before there were a whole lot of power tools and all the other things. I mean, these guys, they were doing all this by hand.
Yes, yes, and using things with a creative mind. My house has trolley tracks holding it up underneath. It has filing cabinet boxes that are used as venting for the register of the furnace. That's the charm. You're always discovering something, and you're always discovering history and people.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if you look at, you know, in our case, the Gustav Holmes family, you know, they went to a lot of trouble to do the trompe-l'oeil and, you know, all the wood graining. I mean, that was expensive for them to do all of that work. So our commitment and my belief is that we need to honor that. We could have easily taken that all and painted over it and said, forget it. Would have been way less expensive, to be honest, but you're not honoring the history and the vision of the original owners of the house.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
It's worth the effort, because if you're communicating, if you have a vision and you have a good team, you'll all come out in the end as friends and stuff will look good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting point that, you know, you start off as, you know, basically employer and worker, so to speak,
yeah.
and end up with friendship, and you end up with, now if I ever call any of the people that have worked on the house, they're coming over in a few minutes generally to help, because it's their house.
Thank you both for joining me today and
yeah.
sharing with our listeners about, you know, this huge project. I'm Astronomist Ray with
Mike Brocious
and Joe Lumpkin Brown.
Thank you so much to Mike and Joe for being this month's guests on The Preservationist. The Preservationist airs every third Tuesday of the month at 9:30 a.m. on KMUN. I'd like to give a special thanks to the team here at KMUN, the staff, volunteers, and members of the Lower Columbia Preservation Society, and thank you to Camila Swordloff for producing our theme song. And thank you for listening to The Preservationist. And remember, anyone can be a preservationist. The Preservationist is a production of the Lower Columbia Preservation Society for KMUN, written and produced by Astronomist Ray. I'm Astronomist Ray. Thanks for tuning in.